ಜಯಂ ಶ್ರೀಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಶತ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮಾನ್ ಅಭಯ ಚರಣಾರವಿಂದ ಭಕ್ತ ವೇದಾಂತ ಗೋಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಮಹಾರಾಜ ಶ್ರೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಕಿ ಜಯಂ ತ್ರಿಲೀಲಾ ಪ್ರವಿಷ್ಟ ಓಂ ಶ್ರೀಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಶತ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮಾನ್ ಭಕ್ತ ಸಿದ್ಧಾಂತ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ಮಹಾರಾಜ ಶ್ರೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಕಿ ಅನಂತಕೋಟಿ ವೈಷ್ಣವ ವೃಂದಕಿ ನಾಮಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಹರಿದಾಸ್ ಠಾಕೂರ್ ಕಿ ಪ್ರೇಮ ಸಹೋ ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರ ಭಕ್ತ ವೃಂದಕಿ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ರಾಧಾಕೃಷ್ಣ ಗೋಪ ಗೋವಿನಾಥ ಶ್ಯಾಮಕುಂಡ ರಾಧಾಕುಂಡ ಗಿರಿ ಗೋವರ್ಧಾಮಕಿ ವೃಂದಾವನ್ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಮಾಯಪುರ್ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಮಧುರಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಜಗನ್ನಾಥಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ದ್ವಾರಕಾಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಗಂಗಮಾಯಿಕಿ ಯಮುನಮಾಯಿಕಿ ತುಳಸಿದೇವಿಕಿ ಭಕ್ತಿದೇವಿಕಿ ಸಾಮವೇದ ಭಕ್ತ ವೃಂದಕಿ ಗೌ ಪ್ರೇಮಾನಂದಿ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬ್ಲಿ ಬಾಡೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬ್ಲಿ ಬಾಡೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬ್ಲಿ ಬಾಡೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಶ್ರೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ನಮಃ ಶುಭದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪ್ರಸಾದ ಬುದ್ಧಲೇ ಶ್ರೀ ಭಕ್ತಿವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ನಾಮಿನಿ ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸರಸ್ವದೇವಂ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಚಾರಿಣಿ ನ ವಿಶೇಷ ಶೂನ್ಯವಾದಿ ಭಾಷಾದಿ ದೇಶಧಾರಿಣಿ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಸಂಸಾರ ಸಾಗರೇ ಮಗ್ನಂ ದೀನಂ ಮಾಂ ಕರುಣಾನಿಧೇ ಕರ್ಮಗ್ರಾಹಗೃಹೀತಾಂಗಂ ಮಾಮುದ್ಧರ ಭವಾರ್ಣವಾದ್ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ಭಾಗವದಾಖ್ಯೋಯಂ ಪ್ರತ್ಯಕ್ಷ ಕೃಷ್ಣಮೇವ ಹಿ ಸ್ವೀಕೃತೋಸಿ ಮಯಾ ನಾಥ ಮುಕ್ತ್ಯರ್ಥಂ ಭವಸಾಗರೇ ಮನೋರಥೇ ಮದೀಯೋಯಂ ಸಫಲಾ ಸರ್ವದಾ ತ್ವಯಾ ನಿರ್ವಿಘ್ನೇ ನೈವ ಕರ್ತವ್ಯಂ ದಾಸೋಹಂ ತವ ಕೇಶವ ಭವೇ ಭವೇ ಯಥಾ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಪಾದಯೋರ್ಥವ ಜಾಯತೆ ತಥಾ ಕುರುಷ್ವ ದೇವೇಶ ನಾದಸ್ತ್ವಂ ನೋ ಯತ ಪ್ರಭೋ ನಾಮ ಸಂಕೀರ್ತನಂ ಯಸ್ಯ ಸರ್ವಭಾವ ಪ್ರನಾಶನಂ ಪ್ರಣಾಮೋ ದುಃಖ ಶಮನಂ ತಂ ನಮಾಮಿ ಹರಿಂ ಪರಂ ಜನ್ಮಾದ್ಯಸ್ಯ ಯತೋನ್ವಯಾದಿತರತಶ್ಚ ಆರ್ತೇಷ್ವಭಿಜ್ಞಸ್ವರಾನ್ ತೇನೇ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮಹೃದಾಯ ಆದಿಕವಯೇ ಮುಹ್ಯಂ ಧಿಯಲ್ ಸೂರಯಂ ತೇಜೋ ವಾರಿಮೃದಂ ಯಥಾ ವಿನಿಮಯೋ ಯತ್ರ ತ್ರಿಸರ್ಗೋ ಮೃಷಾ ಧಾಮ್ನಾ ಸ್ವೇನ ಸದಾ ನಿರಸ್ತ ಕುಹಗಂ ಸತ್ಯಂ ಪರಂ ಧೀಮಹಿ ಧರ್ಮ ಪ್ರೋಜ್ಜಿತ ಕೈದವೋತ್ರ ಪರಮೋ ನಿರ್ಮತ್ಸರಾಣಾಂ ಸದಾಂ ವೇದ್ಯಂ ವಾಸ್ತವಮತ್ರ ವಸ್ತು ಶಿವದಂ ತಾಪತ್ರಯೋನ್ಮೂಲನಂ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ಭಾಗವದೇ ಮಹಾಮುನಿ ಕೃತೇ ಕಿಂ ವಾ ಪರೈರೀಶ್ವರ ಸದ್ಯೋ ಹೃದ್ಯವರುಧ್ಯದೇತ್ರ ಕೃತಿಭಿ ಶುಶ್ರೂಷು ಭೀತಕ್ಷಣಾನ್ ನಿಗಮ ಕಲ್ಪದರೋರ್ಗಲಿದಂ ಫಲಂ ಶುಕ ಮುಖಾದ ಮೃದ ದ್ರವ ಸಂಯುಧಂ ಪಿಬದ ಭಾಗವತಂ ರಸಮಾಲಯಂ ಮುಹುರಹೋ ರಸಿಕಾ ಭುವಿ ಭಾವುಕಾಃ ಸಚ್ಚಿದಾನಂದ ರೂಪಾಯ ವಿಶ್ವೋತ್ಪತ್ಯಾದಿ ಹೇತವೇ ತಾಪತ್ರಯ ವಿನಾಶಾಯ ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯ ವಯಂ ನಮಃ ಯಂ ಪ್ರವ್ರಜಂದಂ ಅನುಪೇತಮಪೇತ ಕೃತ್ಯಂ ದ್ವೈಪಾಯನೋ ವಿರಹಕಾದರಂ ಆಜುಹಾವ ಪುತ್ರೇದಿ ತನ್ಮಯದಯತ್ತರವೋಭಿನೇದು ತಂ ಸರ್ವಭೂತ ಹೃದಯಂ ಮುನಿಂ ಆನತೋಸ್ಮಿ ಯಸ್ವಾನುಭಾವಮಖಿಲ ಶ್ರುತಿ ಸಾರಮೇಕಂ ಅಧ್ಯಾತ್ಮದೀಪಂ ಅತಿಥಿತೀರ್ಷದಾಂ ತಮೋಂಧಂ ಸಂಸಾರಿಣಾಂ ಕರುಣಯಾಹ ಪುರಾಣ ಗುಹ್ಯಂ ತಂ ವ್ಯಾಸಸೂನಂ ಉಪಯಾಮಿ ಗುರುಂ ಮುನೀನಾಂ ನಾರಾಯಣಂ ನಮಸ್ಕೃತ್ಯ ನರಂ ಚೈವ ನರೋತ್ತಮಂ ದೇವಿಂ ಸರಸ್ವತಿಂ ವ್ಯಾಸಂ ತತೋ ಜಯಮುದೀರಯೇ ಕಮನೀಯ ಕಿಶೋರ ಮುಗ್ಧ ಮೂರ್ತೇ ಕಳವೇಣು ಕೊಡಿದಾದೃದಾನನೆಂದೋ ಮಮ ವಾಚಿ ವಿಜೃಂಭದಾ ಮುರಾರೇ ಮಧುರಿಂನ ಕಣಿಕಾಪಿ ಕಾಪಿ ಕಾಪಿ ನಮಃ ಓಂ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪ್ರಸ್ಥಾಯ ಭೂತಲೆ ಶ್ರೀಮದೇ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿನ್ ಇತಿ ನಾಮಿನೇ ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸರಸ್ವತೀ ದೇವಿ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಚಾರಿಣಿ ನಿರ್ವಿಶೇಷ ಶೂನ್ಯವಾದಿ ಪಾಶ್ಚಾತ್ಯ ದೇಶಧಾರಿಣಿ శ్రీమల్ గురు చరణారవిందాభ్యాం నమః. వందే నందం వ్రజ స్త్రీణాం పాదరేణుమభీష్ణశ యాసం హరిగదోద్గీతం పునాది భువనత్రయం గోపీచరణారవింద పరమాణవే నమః. పీతాంబరం కరవిరాజిత చక్రశంఖం కౌమోదగీ సరసిజం కరుణాసముద్రం రాధాసహాయం అతిసుందర మందహాసం వాతాళయేశమనిశం హృది భావయామి. కోమళం కూజయన్ వేణుం శ్యామళోయం కుమారగా వేదవేద్య పరం బ్రహ్మ భాసదాం పురదో మమ. మూకం కరోతి వాజాలం పంగం లంఘయదే గిరిం యల్కృపాతమహం వందే పరమానందమాధవం. ఓం శ్రీకృష్ణాయ నమః. శ్రీమతి రాధికాయే నమః. సర్వత్ర గోవింద నామ సంకీర్తనం గోవింద గోవింద. Last Sunday, we were discussing from Avirhotram Harshis answer to King Nimi. The question was, how to get out of karma? That was the question. Wasn't it? The question was asked by King Nimi that to tell him, the king asked a question to talk about karma yogam. Karma yogam vadada na ha purusha oyena samskradaha. This is verse 41 in the canto 11 chapter 3. Karma yogam vadada na purusha oyena samskradaha vidhuye hashu karmani naishkarmyam vindade param. This was the question from the king. We have discussed that. And then also, evam prashna rishin purvam apruchyam pidurandige na bruvan brahmana putra tatra karanam uchyatam. So these questions, two questions were asked, and Avirhotra Maharshi started answering them. So how does he begin? He says, karmam akarmam vikarmam idi vedavado na laugika vedasya cheshu almatval tatra muhyandi surayam. He said, karmam akarmam vikarmam. This, even those who have understood the Vedas, even they do not fully understand the intricacies of these three aspects of karma. Karma, akarma and vikarma. Even they do not know that. And cheshuratmatval tatra muhyanti suraya. Even they are bewildered by these things. So what possibility is there? So we spoke about the importance of karma. Isn't it? Importance of karma. Karma and this rebirth or changing the body. These are the two things which is specific to Vedic philosophy. They don't exist in any other philosophy in this world. They are the very fundamental issues of the Vedic culture. What are they? One, this law of karma. And secondly, the law of transmigration of the soul. These two things, transmigration of the soul and the law of karma, they are very deeply embedded in the Vedic philosophy. It is based on these two, everything has been built up on the basis of this. And they do not come strongly as, although sometimes in other processes also they talk about it in a very minute way. Strictly, these two are the very basis of Vedic philosophy. Karma and also the transmigration of the soul from one body to another. So that is one thing to remember. Secondly, we have discussed this before also, that the process of hearing is a process in the Vedic literature. The process of hearing. Why hearing has been given so important? We have discussed this before. I don't know if anybody remembers why hearing is more important than all the other senses. Can anyone say why?
Go straight to the heart.
No.
This is a very technical reason which I gave before, why it is hearing more important than anything else. Reason is this. The out of all the five senses are connected with five material elements, isn't it? That you know. All the five senses of knowledge are connected with five material elements. From this we will also decide where, what kind of listeners we are. From this analysis. You see, the ear is a subtle aspect of the sky. Shabdham. Shabdham is the one which the ear senses. Isn't it? The ear senses. The nose is the subtle aspect of the earth. Because earth has got smell. So smell and the nose and the earth, they are connected through this process of smelling. Okay. So like this, Agni and a fire also. So out of all these five senses, if you look into the creation process also, it will say that from the sky begins everything. The sound comes from the sky. That's where the creation begins. Or in other words, of all the five material elements and senses, the most extremely subtle thing is the ear. Is the ear. Therefore, ear is more competent to capture the message of the soul. That's the technical reason behind it. It is not the eyes, not the taste, not the any of the other tongue or anything is capable as good as catching the pure message of the spiritual knowledge, what is discussed in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, technically speaking, these ears have got a much more importance than anything else. Therefore, the Vedas itself is called Shruti. Shruti means to hear. So Shravanam and Shruti goes together. Otherwise, why Vedas could have been called something else, isn't it? But instead, Vedas themselves are referred to in the Shastram as Shruti for this reason. The technically speaking, these ears have got the most subtle capacity to capture that. Because out of all the five material senses, which are they? The ears, the nose, the tongue, the touch, and all that, out of them, the most sensitive and the most subtle of all is this ear, which is directly connected with the sky, the sound. So therefore, it's given that importance, hearing process. Therefore, Vedavyasa Maharshi, instead of doing anything else, he simply created Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam and gave it to us. He said, you just hear it. That's enough. If it goes inside, because it is the truth has to come out one day. It has to show its potency. And it will have its effect on anyone who hears or carefully hears Bhagavatam without like a proper listener. And then it will have its impact on that person. It has to have. And that is why the Shravanam process is given so much importance. Now, just like Vedavyas is such an expert in knowing the future. He is Krishna's literary incarnation, as we call him. And he knows the mind of all the living entities, how they work and how they can relate with things. So he, when he presented Bhagavad Gita also, you will notice certain things specifically there. He begins Bhagavad Gita with a blind person's name, Dhritarashtra Uvacha, isn't it? It begins with a blind person. Not only he was blind, his wife was also blind, wasn't it? Gandhari. Gandhari was also tied her ears, tied her eyes with a cloth and kept herself in darkness. What does it indicate? Actually, Vedavyas is telling us to look at this. All of us are actually blind. We are all blind like Dhritarashtra and Gandhari. Either we are blind by nature or we have made ourselves blind like Gandhari has done. Either way, whatever it is, because we don't want to see the truth. Krishna is speaking the truth and we are questioning Krishna all the time. Saying that, is this true what you are saying, or is this question I have, that question I have? We bring down Krishna's absolute truth is speaking, and we are saying, is it still the truth? This mentality has come to us because we are all Dhritarashtra's children. That's why it is. We have got that tradition of Dhritarashtra. We didn't get any better Arjuna Pandava's tradition, unfortunately. we got Dhritarashtra's tradition. If we have Pandava's tradition, what will happen is we will have that curiosity to inquire further. And we'll also have that intelligence to know who Krishna is. And accordingly to take this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam seriously. So from there itself, he begins. Otherwise, why should he begin Bhagavad Gita, such an auspicious Vedic literature, with this blind man's name? You'll take, for example, Vishnu's 1000 names of Vishnu. So many things Vedavyas has written. Beautiful verses he begins everything with. Shuklam Bharadaram Vishnum Shashivarnam Chaturbhujam Prasanna Vadanam Dhyayet Sarva Vigno Vashandaye. That's the first verse in the Vishnu Sahasranamam, 1000 names of Vishnu. There, the beautiful words he has used. But Bhagavad Gita, he has chosen this word Dhritarashtra Vacha. That's one. Secondly, we all have this impression that Mahabharatam is a great Vedic literature. And in the middle of Mahabharatam comes this Bhagavad Gita. That is how we understood this, isn't it? That's our impression, at least in our mind. Strictly speaking, it's not like that. In order to present Bhagavad Gita, he wrote Mahabharatam, not the other way. In order to present Bhagavad Gita to this world, he wrote Mahabharatam. Not that he wrote Mahabharatam and in the middle Bhagavad Gita came in. There's too little difference between the two, isn't it? That his goal was to present the spiritual truth to the world, and that was Bhagavad Gita. So in order to present this Bhagavad Gita, he wrote this long Vedic literature called Mahabharatam with 125,000 verses in it, so that people understand the Bhagavad Gita's position, what it is. And it comes to the top, to its climax when Bhagavad Gita was spoken. So in other words, in Bhagavad Gita, the greatest literature is, in Mahabharatam, the greatest literature is Bhagavad Gita. There is also one or two other places, like the instructions from Bhishma to Yudhishthira Maharaj, 1000 names of Vishnu. Similarly, the Sanal Sujadiyam, which is also instructions to from Bhishma to Dhritarashtra from Sanal Kumara Maharshi. They are also there. But Bhagavad Gita is very special because Supreme Personality of Godhead is speaking there, and in order to make us aware of the gravity of the words he has spoken, he brought that into Mahabharatam. In other words, Mahabharatam was specifically written so that he could present Bhagavad Gita to us. That was the reason behind it. This is one thing. Secondly, these are all just a few things to think about. Secondly, you'll also know that in the Mahabharatam, when the story comes out, Vedavyasa Maharshi's creation, if you look at the creation process, the 100 children who were born, how they were born, you know that in the story how they were born. That this Gandhari was in an urgency to have the children. Her stomach was cut open, and from that a piece of flesh came out. And then Gandhari felt repentant, because Kunti Devi had by now children, and Gandhari had no children. Gandhari was a little bit upset about that. So she was impatient, and she cut open her mouth with a stone or something. She broke the stomach, and from there a piece of flesh came out. Gandhari was in a predicament, not knowing what to do. At that point, Vedavyasa Maharshi told her to cut that piece of flesh into 100 pieces and put them in 100 pots. And in course of time, Vedavyasa Mantri then chanted some mantras and allowed that pieces of flesh to generate life inside. This is a very important thing to remember. I will tell you why it's important. From those 100 children which were born from that piece of flesh, they are the Kauravas. And then there was a small piece still left from which Dushala was born. Dushala was the sister of these 100 brothers. Now, this is how the Kauravas were born. In other words, whenever life is created out of matter, from Jatam. Jatam means matter, dead matter. And when the life is created from Chaitanyam means the living force, they are two different scenarios. The one that comes out of matter will show all that materialistic nature by its own very creation itself. It has to have that material qualities in them. the one that has come from jadam, dead matter. Whereas those who come from the living force, from the chaitanyam, which is the normal way of birth, in strictly speaking, what Vedavyasa has done is cloning. What we are talking about today as cloning, that is what Vedavyasa has done. He did the cloning. In other words, cloning was very much known to him even at that time. Today we are saying we are capable of cloning, isn't it? Cloning is started by the scientists and it is developing as a big industry even. So whatever it is, this cloning process is not new. It was known to them. It was not a new thing. That's one thing. Secondly, in other words, what we today developed it as, we call it as in a very posh way, genetic engineering. That's why we call it genetic engineering. So this genetic engineering, this philosophy is not unknown to the sages. They know all the secrets of all this life, creation. It is not that only the scientists knew about it. Scientists have now developed a certain understanding of that and they are trying to progress on that path. But whatever it is, this genetic engineering was known to Vedavyas, how to create life from dead matter. That's one. Secondly, you will see also during the Mahabharata war, certain things were very prominent. What was that? The use of nuclear weapons. Nuclear weapons was known to them, the technology of these nuclear weapons. That's why through various ashrams they have created in the war, during the war, have come from the sages', sages' understanding of this technology. They didn't create like the way we have created nuclear weapons today. They had, through mantram, they were able to generate the same amount of destruction like the way nuclear forces are able to create today, the destruction. So the nuclear engineering and genetic engineering, these two topics, what the modern world is talking about, is where it was very much prevalent even in the sages' life. The sages also knew, and that was the time when these two technologies are developing very well, that it is time for destruction also. It's time for destruction also. So Krishna knows that he has allowed a certain capacity to use these mind intelligence senses in the proper way. When they are misused for wrong purposes, in order, like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita about that, isn't it? About the, in the divine and the demonic nature, he will talk about it. Pravartinja nivartinja janana vidurasura. That they do not know what is pravarti and what is nivarti. When the whole human society is directing towards pravarti instead of nivarti, they are called asuras. Pravartinja nivartinja janana vidurasura. Na shaujam na vijajaro na satyam teshu vidyade asatyam na pradishtam ja jagadahu ranishwaram aparaspara sambhudam kimanyer kamahedugam evam drishtvam avasthabhya nashtalpan alphabuddhaya prabhavandi ugradarmani shayaya jagato hidaha. That's what Krishna says in the in that chapter, Divine and Demoniac Nature. So if you read these verses in the Bhagavad Gita, you can see when these kind of propensities like this develop inside, what does it mean? It means the asuric nature is building up in us. The demonic nature is building up in the human society. And when that demonic nature builds up, what happens? Pravartinja nivartinja janana vidurasura. They do not know what is pravarti and what is nivarti. Human life is meant for advancing on the path of pravarti, nivarti, not pravarti. Pravarti means to absorb in extending our material life. That is pravarti. Absorbing in things which are meant for immediate happiness and on a bodily platform to operate. That is pravarti. Nivarti means how to get out of this transmigration of the soul or the repeated birth and death. That is nivarti. So Krishna says, asura people do not know the difference between pravarti and nivarti. They will be absorbed in pravarti all the time. Then, na shaujam na bijajaro na satyam teshu vidyade. They have no truthfulness in them. And they have no proper behavior in them. And they have no cleanliness. So Krishna says it's difficult for them to understand what is nivarti. So there are so many things in the Bhagavad Gita. When you closely study, these things will come out. Like we discussed this before when we talked about Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is very much taken from the Upanishads. The knowledge in the Upanishads has come out in the form of Bhagavad Gita. If you read that in different, several places, Prabhupada mentions that also. Then there he said, Kathopanishad verses, isn't it? From Kathopanishad, many verses in the second chapter has come about. So there it was spoken that the that Buddhistu Saradhim Vidhi. What does it say? It says there that Manapragrahameva Buddhistu Saradhim Vidhi. Buddhistu Saradhim Vidhi. Krishna says there that he compared this material body to be like a chariot. To be like a chariot. Why all this comparison is done is only because through only in this way, if you present it in an indirect way, people will understand it. Otherwise, they won't understand it. Suppose Krishna directly talks about the soul, none of us will have any connection with it. So, in order to create that connection with the understanding of the soul, Krishna presented it in this way, in the Bhagavad Gita. Buddhistu saradham vidhi manapragraham evacha. Krishna says there, isn't it? So, Buddhistu saradham vidhi means that sarathi is the charioteer, isn't it? Charioteer of the, or the sarathi means one who drives the chariot. So, Krishna said, in the Upanishads it says that when you compare this body with the chariot, the mind is the rein and the chariot or the charioteer in that place position it is buddhi where it should Krishna should be there. Sarathi is Krishna, isn't it? The charioteer is Krishna. So, Atmanam Rathinam Vidhi Shariram Rathamevaja Buddhistu Saradam Vidhi Manapragrahamevaja. That is how it is. Atmanam Rathinam Vidhi. This chariot is the body. Shariram Rathamevaja. Shariram Rathamevaja. And the passenger in the chariot is the soul. Passenger in the chariot is the soul. Atmanam Rathinam Vidhi Shariram Rathamevaja. Buddhistu Saradhim Vidhi. So, the body is the chariot, the soul is the passenger, the mind, the five senses are the five horses, and the rein of the horses is the mind, and the buddhi, intelligence, is the charioteer. So, Krishna, in that verse it is spoken that if you put that Saradhi's position, Krishna has taken. Isn't it? Krishna has taken the Saradhi's position. So, Krishna has taken the Sarathi or charioteer's position in Arjuna's case. Arjuna's case, Krishna took that position. Have you looked at Kauravas? There is a personality called Karna, who was equally powerful, if not more than Arjuna. Everyone feels sorry for Karna sometime, isn't it? They think, why Karna has gone into this trap like this? Why did he not? Member of the Pandava family. Kunti Devi went and requested him to come and fight for the, although abandoned by her in the early days, but still she went and requested him to come and fight for the Pandavas. He wouldn't agree. He stayed with Duryodhana to fight the war. And this Karna has also got a charioteer. Have you looked at him, who the charioteer was? When Karna took over the responsibility of the war, that night before that, there was a discussion in the camp among the Kauravas, who should drive Karna's chariot. So, the idea came up that Shalya should drive Karna's chariot. And everybody knew this Shalya, what kind of charioteer he was, compared to Arjuna's charioteer. Arjuna's charioteer was Krishna. And Karna's charioteer was Shalya. Have you noticed Shalya? Shalya was constantly bringing Karna down by his words, instead of encouraging him. In other words, what does it show? That if the buddhi is not properly controlled, if the intelligence is not properly controlled by someone, what will happen is that person will collapse at the end. Karna's failure mostly was because of the Shalya. Shalya was responsible for that, because Shalya was, by character, he was like that. His uncle, Duryodhana's uncle. Can you get anyone better than that? Duryodhana's uncle was his charioteer. And here we have Arjuna as Krishna as the charioteer. So when you, if in the buddhi, if the proper knowledge is not given, it what will happen is anything what you do, eventually all kinds of danger will develop into disaster. That's what it is showing. When the right person spoke the right knowledge to the intelligence of Arjuna, even though it was danger, it eventually turned out to be auspicious for him in the war. On the other hand, for for Karna, who chose the charioteer as Shalya. Shalya spoke and gave all kinds of false and wrong advice to Karna, completely from a borderless platform without any spiritual understanding. The result was Karna had to finish up in the war and lose his life in there. So just to indicate, all you have to look at both sides all the time, the Kauravas and the Pandavas, how they are working in two different planes. Pandavas were working under the Krishna's instructions. Kauravas were working under instructions of people like Shailya. And therefore, that the result was also going in the same way. Vedavyas is trying to tell us a lot of things through these things. How important it is to accept the proper authority. Otherwise, you will be misled. If you take the wrong authority and thinking that, oh, he's also an authority. Karna also took an authority, but it was the wrong authority. What was the point in taking wrong authority? He thought Shalya was a very competent personality. He was on our side. So why not? He should be the best person to drive my chariot. And in that understanding, Karna continued. Result was that he couldn't fight the war. He lost it. So, in the Mahabharatam, all these things comes through very well. And that's why it's important to think about Bhagavad Gita. When you think, you have to think all these things also at the same time. Why Krishna has spoken like that? And what's Krishna's role in the Bhagavad Gita? Now, coming back to these words, this is why I was saying all these things was, that the karmam, akarmam, vikarmam, even very experts in that field, it's very difficult for them to understand. Very difficult for them to understand. Therefore, it is spoken that while talking about the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita, that so many things in the Mahabharatam you can read. So many things in the Mahabharatam you can read. Stories after stories are coming in Mahabharatam. And when somebody takes Mahabharatam and start reading it, you start thinking, what is the message now from all this? So many stories, one after the other. Bhishma saying to Yudhishthira Maharaj, one after the other, so many, and then so much history behind it, all these things. So people read all these things, but they don't get anywhere. Where are we going with this? So the essence of everything, of all this Mahabharatam, is there in the Bhagavad Gita, which is kept right in the middle of the Mahabharatam itself. So that after reading all that, we'll come to... This is how one has to study Mahabharatam. Otherwise, if you simply read, I have seen the movie Mahabharatam, I know all the story, that is no good. That's good enough for the people, those who are in that category. That those just who want to hear the story. Those who want just to hear the story, that's good. But beyond the story, there is something more to it than that. Vedavyas was not simply a storyteller. We shouldn't think like that. He was just sitting in that cold freezing weather in Himalayas and he was writing the stories for us. That was not the goal behind it. He was not writing stories for us. He was giving us something far, far superior and important in life. But because we are so dull, that he has to make all these stories for us to get it into our head. Therefore, yes. But the message has also kept it there, so that through all these stories it comes to us. Now, when we talk about Krishna also, Krishna doesn't need to perform all these pastimes, isn't it? Do you think to kill Kamsa, Krishna had to come here, take birth in Vrindavan, in Gokul, and go to Vrindavan, and then year after year, Kamsa had to torture the inhabitants of Vrindavanam? All this, is it necessary for Krishna to kill Kamsa? Sitting in Golokam, it can be done. He doesn't have to come here, appear among us as an ordinary human being. He has to show his nature and act years and years to kill Kamsa, or to even to run the Mahabharata war. There was no need for all that. Is there? There was no need for all that. Either to kill Kamsa or to run the Mahabharata, or to conduct the Mahabharata war and to kill all these Kshatriyas who were misbehaving. There was no need for him to even to come here. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He could, sitting there in his abode, he can conduct all this business without any need to come. Need to come here and to go through this. But then why did he come? That question will come, isn't it? reason, that's why it is called avataram. Avataram means to descend. He descends to this world with a goal. The purpose is this, that because if he had done all these things from Golokam, we will not understand Krishna, nor we will have any attachment for Krishna. We will not develop any understanding of God, understanding of Krishna. Therefore, Krishna comes here and acts in a particular way so that we are able to relate with him. We are able to relate with Krishna when Krishna comes and does these kind of things. Killing Kamsa, performing Rajasuyam sacrifice, killing Shishubala, Dandavatra, and all kinds of things what Krishna has done. Rasa dance, and the pastimes, childhood pastimes in Vrindavanam, and so many other things what Krishna has done was only to attract us and to make us understand who Krishna is. Otherwise we will not understand. This killing of Kamsa or killing of Jarasandha or killing of Shishubala, all these things could have been executed even from the spiritual world without even coming here. But he had come here and done this so that we get attracted to those stories, to those pastimes. When we get attracted through those pastimes, we will have some appreciation of Krishna. And at that time, Vedavyas presents the science of the soul to us, who is Krishna. The science of the soul, which is Krishna. So step by step, he is drawing us towards the truth. Towards the truth. That is why it's spoken like this. That's why in the next verse you will find in the next verse in the Bhagavadam, verse 44. Parochavado Vedoyam Balana Manushasanam Karma Mokshaya Karmani Vidate Hyagadam Yatha. Parasvabhava Parochavado Vedoyam Balana Manushasanam Parochavadam. It is called Parochavadam. Parochavadam means not speaking directly anything. Speaking everything in an indirect way. Everything in an indirect way. You have seen this is the way the sages present the things to us. In an indirect way, everything. It is spoken indirectly for one reason, that we are children. That is why it is. If from their eyes, when they look at us, we are just children for them. That is why it's said in the next word, Balana Manishasanam. Balana means kids. We are just kids, the young little boys. So what do? With the young boys when we want to get them, when we want them to do anything? What do? We bribe them, isn't it? We bribe them in different way. Somebody gives some chocolate, somebody promise a movie, somebody promise a toy, or somebody promises something else. Somehow or the other, their intelligence is not developed, so they have to be bribed. And that bribing process is all these long-standing stories and pastimes. Parokshavado, everything spoken indirectly. Balana Manushasanam. That's the only way you can instruct the children. You can instruct the children. Sometimes you have noticed this. Some children, unless they hear a story, they won't sleep, go to sleep. Unless they hear a story, they won't eat the meal. They will make all sorts of excuses not to eat. So the mother knows the technique, how to bring them under control. She'll tell them that, I'll tell you a nice story if you eat all this, and start offering all the things what she has cooked. So he will say, okay, if I hear a story, I'll listen to it. If I get a story, then I will eat. Or if I get a story, I'll go to sleep. Otherwise, he'll mess around doing this or the other. So the mother starts saying the story. And the child is listening to the story. And the story has no meaning. It can be any story, isn't it? Any story. Whether it makes sense or not, doesn't make. There is no question in story. That's what they say, isn't it? So she starts saying a story. Once there was a woman, she was a barren woman. And then she had three children, he says. She says the next thing. So one has not come out of the womb, one was going to take birth, and one has come out, but he does not know. Previously, now if the boy asks, how can a barren woman have three children, then the whole story is finished there. But he won't ask, he'll say, then what happened? He keeps asking. And she keeps on saying things like that. She says, they went on a trip in a desert. They were walking in a desert. And she keeps on building the story all the time without any sense. While walking through the desert, they saw a huge lake with full of flowers and fruit trees everywhere. So many things which cannot exist in the forest. And he finds it more and more interesting, keeps asking more and more questions. He doesn't say anything. Keeps saying, continue the story, he keeps saying. So, like this, this Balana Manushasanam is like that. That some story is required for us to capture the message. And if you get stuck with the stories, it's a big problem. Because stories are necessary, not that it has to be avoided. It is necessary. And they are not stories, they are Krishna's pastimes. Because Krishna knows, if I do all these pastimes, people will find some interest in me. And they will take some interest to come back to me. Otherwise, sitting in Golokam, and if I start controlling things from there, they won't know me anything. How will they know what I am? How my true identity? Rather, they will sit here, they will say, we are happy in our world, you be happy in your world. They will say it to us. So Krishna doesn't want us. So in order to give us an opportunity, all these pastimes were performed. And simply by hearing these pastimes, one automatically, he gets purified. He gets purified because it is the potency is there in that pastimes of Krishna. Now the child will hear the stories till he finishes the meal. As soon as the meal is finished, the story also finishes there. And straight away, business is over. Similarly, it is also said here, Parokshavado Vedoyam Balanam Anushasanam. This is the way the sages instructs us, in this way. They wrote Srimad Bhagavatam in the same way. Pulled out all the different pastimes of all the great personalities, great devotees, great incarnations of Krishna, and packaged them together in a nice form in Bhagavatam. That's what they have done in Srimad Bhagavatam. Brought out all pastimes of Krishna, pastimes of previous incarnations, pastimes of great devotees, and made it up in such a way and presented the truth within Srimad Bhagavatam in that way. So those who are absorbed in deeper understanding of things, they will inquire further. They won't be like the children. Children will just hear the story and leave. So Parokshavadam is like that. Parokshavado Vedoyam Balanam Anushasanam. And when you hear this story, you will also find sometimes some things which will not be acceptable to your mind and intelligence. Mind and intelligence will reject that. And that's also done deliberately. It's been done deliberately by the sages. Sages did not want us to get trapped in the mind and intelligence, in the level of mind and intelligence. Why? Because our general nature is to capture everything with mind and intelligence. And the subject they are presenting to us is not something which can be captured by mind and intelligence. So therefore, they do not want us to get trapped in that. Intelligence is all fixed knowledge. We have said this before, isn't it? It's all fixed knowledge. What is fixed knowledge means? You conduct some research in the university or make some investigations and find out that something is working due to some particular reasons. You find out the reason, then you experiment it, prove it, and then you accept it. And that is intelligence. That's intelligence, the kind of intelligence it is. Majority of the things, what intelligence learn to analyze is in this way, in this method. Intelligence cannot go to the level of the soul because it's come from the soul at the end. It cannot capture the soul. Therefore, the sages also don't want us to get trapped there in the intelligence. So therefore, what they have done was, when they wrote Bhagavatam or Ramayanam or Mahabharatam, you will find in all the Vedic literature, you will find there, somewhere, in order to disturb your intelligence, they put things which does not match properly. You will see, they are playing with our intelligence. We are not aware of that. And we are trying to analyze them. They are more intelligent than us, actually. That is why the problem is. Because they are so higher understanding of, they have already understood what intelligence is. Whereas, the highest level we have reached is the intelligence level. We are not gone, soul level, forget it. We are not reached anywhere near to that. We are always maximum on the, either in the bodily level, senses level, or in the mental level, or the intellectual level. This is how we go maximum. So, they are playing with our mind and intelligence by
introducing so many things. As I mentioned before, in the Bhagavatam, you will see so many statements. Chitrakedu had 10 million wives, it says. And you start thinking, 10 million wives? Cannot be. 1 million, even that is too much. 1 million wives, even one wife is more than enough, I think. Suddenly, 1 million, and then 10 million wives. So, why is this whole thing is like this? Is Bhagavatam? You start thinking like that, isn't it? Then in another place it says, Jarasandha had 4 billion servants, it says. 4 billion servants. One devotee was distributing these books, and somebody who bought this book and read it, he read this 4 billion servants. You know what question he asked? He asked this devotee, he could not distribute the books anymore after that, because he came back to him and told him, this happened in Los Angeles. You can see in the conversations this question coming up. They came back to the devotee and asked him, that look, you gave me this book and you told me it's a book about God, about Krishna. It was all very nice up to this point. But when I read this, he said, is somebody who is writing very good fiction, he said, that Ugrasena had 4 billion servants. So that time he said, do you mean to say that the population in this world at that time was more than 4 billion? Today even we have only 4 or 5 billion. And he is going from his educational background. He is thinking this planet never had more population than today. That's one. Because he is thinking because of the science, the lifespan has gone up considerably. Now we have reached the maximum amount of population in this planet. According to the historians and the statistics, shows like that. In the statistics, what's available today. But what was happening 5,000 years ago, we don't know anything about it. We don't even have history for 2,000 years properly. What to talk about 5,000? So anyway, so his education and training was on that basis. So he's asking this question, that if you say Ugrasena had 4 billion servants, how do I understand that? So devotee also got confused. He did not know what to say to him. So like this, this is all nothing but that the sages are playing with us. That they don't want our mind and intelligence trapped in these things. Then they want us to leave these things behind, not into these details. Details are not important. Details are not important. In another place you will see, if you start reading the 10th canto, in the 29th chapter, Sri Shuka Vaja, Shukadeva Goswami is saying there, Bhagavan Abhidhuratri Sharadolphila Malliga Vichirandam Yathashchakra Yogamaya Mubashrida. That's how that pastime begins, Rasa dance. When Rasa dance begins, first verse itself, Shukadeva Goswami said, Krishna took the assistance of Yogamaya and came for Rasa dance. He mentioned that in the first verse. Then in the next two or three verses he says, there were 110 million gopis who were dancing with Krishna in Vrindavanam. 110 million. 110 million, imagine. So immediately we read it and we start thinking, how is that possible? Vrindavan hardly can accommodate 100,000 people. If 100,000 people can live there, it is comfortably, we should consider it a success with all the multi-story buildings we are building there now. In those days, according to our calculation, there were no multi-story buildings. They were all either huts like the gopis lived, so simple. If it was like that, 110 million, how will that fit in with the equation? Again confused. So, like this, throughout Bhagavatam, you will see this. In Ramayanam also the same thing, not much different. You will see a lot of things here and there in order not to get trapped in this intellectual trap. Sages use these things as a technique to get us out from that. It is not, spiritual knowledge is not a fixed thing. It's a growing process all the time. There is no black and white answer in spiritual life. You may wonder how many people have realized the absolute truth in different processes. Through yogam, through karmam, through jnanam, through bhakti. They all realize the, and once they have realized the truth, then they know that all these things, what you are studying at Swapnam, Jagrat and Sushupti, have all no meaning. Because these intellectual nature, intelligence and the trapped intelligence, they all work very well under the control of these three states of existence, Jagrat, Swapnam and Sushupti. But once you transcend them, go into the higher states of consciousness, automatically you will know that the knowledge what I was acquiring was also not knowledge. That is the time when you see, you have to look down at that time and see that all the so-called knowledge what I have acquired in my Jagrat state, all these books what I have read in the Jagrat state, they all do not apply to me anymore. Because at that time it's a realized state of consciousness. You will see, Krishna says this in the Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter. If you read through it, you will see, Krishna says there, Yadade moha kalilam. That is how he begins that verse. That is before. You see, when he started talking about Sthita Prajna, Sthita Prajna means one person with a steady intelligence. Arjuna asked the question, isn't it? Arjuna asked the questions to Krishna, how do you recognize a person who has steady intelligence? Arjuna is asking Krishna that question. How do you recognize a person who has got steady intelligence? If you remember this verse in the second chapter, Sthita Prajna Sega Bhasha, Samadhistasya Keshava, Sthita Dighi Praya Sheta, Kimasil Vrajedakim. That was the question. Arjuna says that what are the symptoms of one whose consciousness is thus merged in transcendence? How does he speak? What is his language? How does he sit and how does he walk? These questions Arjuna asked Krishna. Now, from that very question, you can understand Arjuna is not very advanced at that time spiritually. Because right in front of Arjuna was a Sthita Prajna standing there, Krishna. And he could not understand him. And this is our position also in this world. We will think that we understand spiritually somebody is advanced, somebody is less advanced. We come to so many conclusions wrongly in our mind. Somebody is beating the drum big way, he thinks so, he's very advanced. Somebody is not beating any drum, he's sitting quietly in his house, chanting the holy name, he thinks he's useless. He's not making it, he's struggling, we say. So all false concepts gets into your head. But here, from this very question, Arjuna's question, Arjuna is asking Krishna, how does a person of steady intelligence, that's what the translation Srila Prabhupada is given here, isn't it? Translation, steady intelligence, Sthita Dhi, Sthita Prajna. Sthita Prajna Sega Bhasha, Samadhista Sekeshava, one who is situated in fixed Krishna consciousness, or another place it's also steady intelligence it's called. One who is situated in fixed Krishna consciousness, Sthita Prajna, Sthita Prajnasya. How does one understand, he says, such a person? So, by now, Arjuna is asking this question on our behalf also, because this very question applies to us also. We think there is nobody else in this world practicing spiritual life. There is no one else who is self-realized. And we ask ourselves sometimes, can you show me one whom I can accept as an authority or who is self-realized? This is where the difficulty comes, because self-realization or the realization of the truth, a person's nature, if you read in the Bhagavatam, if you see his description, it says, Balo unmatta pishajavad, it says. Generally, when they are self-realized, either they are like children, or they are people who are like drunk characters, or they are like devilish by nature, self-realized souls. Balo unmatta pishajavad, Krishna says like this. This will be their nature. And what will we do if you see somebody like that? We will say that he is, somebody once asked this question, that is really advanced soul, he will be like a child. He'll be like a child. Why is that? Because due to his realization, the realization started working. And for him, all what we consider as important is not important for him anymore. Just like a child does not think many things what we think as important, isn't it? What do we think important? Going to office on time is important. Earning the money is important. And fixing the house everywhere it's leaking, or the windows fixing, or
whatever the repair work in the house, these are important. Booking your holidays is important. Children going to school and studying is important. And all of us living healthily at home. And these are the priorities in our life, isn't it? These are not important for a realized soul. For him, like the child, all these things have gone away from his mind. Why is that? Because he is waiting. Some of them are not even aware of the body, that they have a material body. They are not even aware of that. Therefore, they can play their remaining time in this world. And they are not even aware of that. We have spoken about this before, Sadashiva Brahmendra's story, how he was. One person, the Muslim king, came and cut his hand off because he was walking naked. And that is why, next one, Unmatta Pishajavad. Unmatta means, he was like a Vaso Yada Adhikrato Yadiro Madhandaha. Like a drunk. A drunk does not know whether he is having clothes or not, isn't it? He doesn't know whether he has got clothes or not. Similarly, a self-realized soul also, when he is walking through, he may not have clothes on his body. He is not aware of that he has no clothes. So therefore, he is compared to a drunk in that way. So, because it is like that, sometimes not even that he is not aware of his clothes, he is not even aware that he has got a material body. The realization has gone so far that he is not aware that he has got a material body. So when this Muslim king, he come and cut his hand off, the hand fell off, he didn't even stop, he kept walking. Sadashiva Brahmendra's birthplace is close to Tiruchi. When we travel this time, we will go there and see his place where he eventually gave up his body. This is not very long ago, about 200 years ago, this incident happens. And when the Muslim king found out that this had no impact on him, he picks up the hand, the cut hand, which was the cut off from the body, from the below here. He picks up this piece of hand and goes up to him, apologizing to him for what he has done. Because he realized that he was not an ordinary person. He takes that hand and puts it back with that and walks off from there. Didn't even stop to talk, to speak anything. So, Sadashiva Brahmendra's life is like that. There are many, many personalities like that throughout the history you will find, who have gone and realized the truth. Once they have realized the truth, what is material body? Doesn't exist anymore for them. So, therefore it is difficult to explain to someone what his characteristics are when somebody is self-realized. Bhagavatam explains like this. Balo Unmatta Pishajavad. That's the word it has used. So, whereas Arjuna is asking the question, how does he sit? How does he speak? Because Arjuna is still thinking he'll be like an ordinary person like us. Maybe a little different. He'll be talking with a different accent now. Or he'll be doing something else which we don't normally do. So Arjuna has not gone to that consciousness yet. That means he's still on a material consciousness like that. That's why he was asking this question. Sthita Prajnasya Bhasha Samadhistasya Keshava. And if you see in Bhagavad Gita in that second chapter, Krishna wants to tell us even then the symptoms of a realized soul. What is it like? What it's like? And the best example of that realized soul was standing right in front of you. That is the beauty of that. Have you seen something interesting about Krishna? What all kinds of things he has done? In the childhood, main business was stealing, wasn't it? Stealing was the main business. Never seems to have gone to any school, gone through any A-levels, O-levels, nothing. No levels. Just went to and did this stealing for 5-6 years. Then few years was with the gopis, having a good time in his own way. Then later on, if we look at Krishna's life, Pandavas wanted him to be like a representative, Dutha it is called, isn't it, emissary, to go and talk to the Kauravas, to bring some settlement about that. He did that also. So he did the stealing business, he did the pastimes with the gopis, and then he also did this for the Pandavas. Then Arjuna told him that, can you drive my chariot? Krishna says, oh, no problem. Drives the chariot also. After that, in the Rajasuya sacrifice, Yudhishthira Maharaj tells Krishna that we want to honor you in the Rajasuyam as the main guest, chief guest. Krishna says, no problem. He sits there, accepts all that. Then during Rajasuya sacrifice, after all the sages have eaten the food, the plates have to be washed. Krishna says, let me wash those plates. He washes all the plates also. He washes the plates, accepts this position as the chief guest of the Rajasuya sacrifice, drives the chariot for Arjuna, and goes as the representative of the the Pandavas. And in all different things, no change in Krishna. No pride or ego or anything like that. Oh, I am the chief guest in Rajasuya, how can I wash the plates? No. Why is it like that? Because karmam is the main thing. As I mentioned before, this karmam creates everything. And for us, what karmam does? Karmam brings two things to us. What is that? Karta and bhokta. Isn't it? First, that's what happens. I am the doer, I am the enjoyer. Then what else? Ragam and dvesham. Every single karmam you do, you will have either attachment to that, if the results are coming favorably, or the mind decides it's helping us in some way, that karmam is favorable. If the karmam is not bringing favorable results, or if it is bringing distress to us, that karmam is unfavorable. That's called ragam and dvesham. Ragam is attachment, dvesham means aversion. So ragam, dvesham, karta, bhokta, these four things are the problems with karma. And anyone who has these problems with him, he has to get out of it first. That is why karma yogam is spoken. By executing karma yogam, you can come out of these things, and then you are ready to receive the transcendental knowledge, spiritual knowledge. Otherwise, all this Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam and all have very little impact on us because of this. That's why it's so important. This karma yogam comes every time whenever spiritual knowledge is discussed. And this thing 100% was in Krishna's actions. This is what he was showing to us. He was not affected when he was living in Dwaraka as the king, opulent, with the greatest opulence he was living in Dwarakadish, he was, isn't it? Greatest opulence he had. No change in the mood. Still the same. When he was driving Arjuna's chariot, still the same mood. When he was washing the plates of the sages, no change in the mood. How is that possible? That's because this karma yogam, 100% in Krishna's dealings in this world. He's showing us the best example himself by his own activities. While stealing or while dancing with the gopis, when the rasa dance was discussed, what did Sudeva Goswami say at the end? Vikriyidam vadviju vikriyidanja Vishnu. That one who hears this rasa dance, that bhakti ubayidi labhyam, that he will receive devotion to Krishna. That kridrogamashu abahinoti ajirena dhiraha. That his problem of lust and anger, or the lust what is inside, kridrogam, which is the disease of the heart, ashu abahinoti ajirena dhiraha. He will get out of this disease of lust by hearing about the pastime of Krishna with the gopis. In other words, here is that Supreme Personality of Godhead who, even after in the assembly of so many gopis, his mind never moved, not for a second. It was not affected at any instance. While executing various kinds of activities in this world, Krishna's mind, nature was such, it has not affected him any time. Whereas, think about us, every second it is moving, isn't it? The mind is moving. Today, this moment happy, the very next moment miserable. Again happy, again miserable. Like this, day after day, we go with our mind and intelligence. So, this is the difference between a Siddha Prajna and one who is like Arjuna. So, that's why Arjuna was asking this question. And the finest example of Siddha Prajna, all he has to watch was Krishna. But he couldn't think that way. Now here is that personality who is doing everything. And he is thinking he is my friend and dealing with him in that way. So Arjuna Vishada Yogam, the first chapter in Bhagavad Gita, is only to tell us that a conditioned soul is like this. And in the second chapter, when Krishna talks about the spiritual knowledge, you can see how a liberated soul speaks. A liberated soul speaks. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, has to teach us something. That's why he had come. He wants to teach us something. And he wants us to understand it. And but because the science is so subtle, it gets very difficult for him. So he has to bring it all the possible options to explain it to us. That's why in this verse, Parochavado Vedoyam Balana Manushasanam Karma Mokshaya Karmani At Vidate Hyagadam Vyadaham. That everything in the Vedic literature you will find like this. So many things. If you look at Bhagavadam, you will find there a long discussion about creation of this world, universe, isn't it? Creation of the universe. People get absorbed in that and start thinking that, oh, this creation, what is amazing it is, isn't it? They say, yes, it is amazing. And after reading through, then the doubt starts developing. How many universes were created first? Which was created first? And does so many universes exist after that? This is all the nature of the mind. Acharya Swamiji says, the Vedas, Shruti, had no intention to tell us about creation. They had no intention. Because in this creation, which has been created, we don't know when and how long it's going to last here. We have come here 60, 70 years. How will that help me knowing the creation? And if I acquire all the knowledge about creation and what is going to happen after my time, how will that help me today? It has not much of an importance to me today, this creation is concerned. But the problem is this. When you present Krishna consciousness to somebody about spiritual life and the soul, the first question they will ask is, where did this world come from? That will be the question that everyone will ask. So there is answer for that in all the Shastram, in all the different books. In Bible there is one way, in Quran there is another way, and Bhagavatam there is one way it is discussed. And they will also make it, this creation process also discussed in different way in the Vedic literature also. You will notice that also. Like we say five material elements and somewhere else says three material elements. It's spoken like that also. So the sages had no intention to teach us all these things. They did not want us to get stuck with all these things. Creation process, when it's created and knowing the answer. The two-legged animal, four-legged animal were created. In many, many verses, so many things were spoken there. How the human being was created, all that. But if we get stuck with that, we won't go very far in the spiritual life. But in order to quench our curiosity, the Shastram has given some description of the creation to us. Apart from that, it doesn't have any significance to us. Any significance to us as far as spiritual life is concerned. So here Krishna has said that Parokshavado Vedo, Agrahutra is saying Parokshavado Vedoyam Balana Manishasanam. While instructing children, you have to instruct in this way. All these different pastimes, stories, and also the creation process, destruction, devastations, all these things. So after reading all that, we think, oh, now we got a grip on everything, haven't we? We have understood how this has come out. We know when it's going to finish up. And now that's all I need to know. I got everything what I want. I'll go away from here. That's what will happen. But Vedas don't want us to do that. Vedas want us to get the message through first to our head to realize what we are. That alone we don't. I know everything about creation, but I don't know what I am. This is our situation today. We studied everything. We studied Bhagavatam, understood everything about the creation, understood everything about the devastation also, because it says at the end. And then I start comparing that with what the scientists are saying, isn't it? They're also speculating. They're also good at that. And they also come out with some answer. And then we check whether this match with that. This is the next thing we do. This is all what most of the people are doing. And they are busy with this. And if it is matching, they say, yes, this must be the right one. Because we have found out, they also found out the same thing. So it must be correct. If something is not matching, then we say there is something which they don't understand, what we understand. Or we say they have got some point, but we cannot agree with it because Shastra is saying like this. Like this moon business. So much discussion about that. We went to moon or not? This is the question. how good that helped me in my spiritual life, whether we have gone to the moon or not. If we had gone to the moon, say we had gone to the moon, will that help me to realize the self? Will that help me to find out what I am? I don't know what I am, but I know I've gone to the moon. What is the use? It is the same thing. That everything what we are doing is not in relationship with the soul. We are, don't even know what we are. But we are very busy knowing everything else in this creation. This is our misfortune. So therefore it is said that we are children. In spiritual life we are children. So children has to be instructed in a particular way. Parokshavado vedoyam balanam anushasanam. That balanam anushasanam. Exactly like children, it has to be spoken. And there he says, karma mokshaya karmani. Karma mokshaya karmani. That is a very important word you have to take note of. Why I am saying that is, karma mokshaya karmani, Avirhotra Maharshi says, how to kill karmam with karmam. This is what that word means. It's a difficult thing to grasp. We are all thinking continuously doing karmam is the goal of life, isn't it? That's why we are so busy from morning to night in doing something or the other. But once you have grasped the spiritual truth, in other words, if you have realized, you will see there is no karmam to be executed. Karmam is finished. But why karma moksham necessary? Because karmam is the thing that has caused all these problems, isn't it? We talked about the three bodies, causal bodies and the subtle body and the gross body. Three different states according to waking state, dream state and the deep sleep. In waking state we have the jagrat or the gross body. In the dream state we have the subtle body. And in the deep sleep we have the karana shariram or sushma causal body. Now as we discussed before, that how these three bodies interact each other. From one comes the other. That in the baby's case, we saw before, that when the baby is sleeping in the early years, Shastram is saying that sleep is necessary in order to transfer the files of vasanas from the karana shariram into the sushma shariram. It gets transferred. Have you seen when you transfer files in computer, or the files move from one folder and goes and falls into the other? Like this, one after the other, when you transfer a big file. Exactly like that, from Karana Shariram, all the Karana Shariram, as I mentioned before, carries the secret of life, because that's where everything is stored up. It gets transferred into Sushmam. Why? Because it is from Sushmam, execution begins. Execution begins from there. So, it is this Sushmam that is develops into Prarabdha Shariram later, or Prarabdham. Or this gross body comes from that later. So once the transfer is taking place, it needs rest. The child needs rest. That's why at that time it happens. So at that time, his sushma shariram is very empty. Karana shariram is full. As much as the person grows further, he gets older, what will happen is, this sushma shariram becomes full with all the files that's been transferred. Karana shariram becomes empty. That's why at the old age, you find exactly the opposite. Old man doesn't require much sleep. Why? Because the akarna shariram is empty. The causal body is totally empty. But sushma shariram is full with all what the files are there. So what happens? Sushma shariram means what? The mind. Basically it's the mind, chittavritti, isn't it? So this sushma shariram inside, with the chittavritti is inside, that is very active at that time. That's why old people are always thinking. Have you seen old people? They won't smile or anything. They will be very busy thinking. You wonder, what are they thinking about? Their life is almost finishing, but they are thinking at that time. Maximum thinking happens at the old age. In childhood, you don't think. You play. Busy with playing. In the youth, enjoying. But old age, thinking. Why so much thinking? It's because of this. Why? Sushma Shariram is full of files. So he has to organize the files in the Sushma Shariram now. Now what happens? If this Sushma Shariram or this subtle body is full of what is known as Samskaram. As I mentioned before, what Samskaram is? Samskaram means every karma we perform in this world, every karma we perform in this world, first it puts one line inside, a small impression it creates inside, a small impression. And if that karma is continued for a long period of time, that will develop into what is known as this, in that line form, it is called vritti, chitta vritti. That's a shastric word for that. Shastra vritti, chitta vritti is at that time. That line gets thickened, and when it gets thickened, it develops into what is known as vasana. Vasana. Vasana means a kind of impression inside, an impression inside. And this vasana, immediately as it grows inside, it gets life. It gets life inside, and then it becomes samskaram. Once it has become a samskar in a person, then it is very difficult to get out of it. That is why karmam is a dangerous thing. We are thinking karmam will do so many things. Therefore, the people who knew the science of karmam, they will not entangle people unnecessarily in things which is going to create more vasanas and more samskaras in them. Rather, empty the bag inside, the bag of vasanas, empty that, sushma shariram, not to make it lighter, in other words. So, therefore, karmam, but already we have acquired enough inside from several lifetimes, we carry on bringing this with us. And in this life also, even after taking the spiritual life, we don't want to give it up, isn't it? We want to still, in one side spiritual life is going on, the other side we are filling the bag also with different vasanas. This is our position today. So Shastram is saying that in order to come out of this, this karmam has to be brought under control. Otherwise it's not possible. That is why it is said here, karma mokshaya karmani. How to free yourself from karmam by karma. Just like when in the Shastram, the example is given like this. If you are walking bare feet, suppose a thorn goes inside, a thorn gets inside, you use another thorn to pull this thorn out and you throw both away. Isn't it? You throw both things away. That's how you take the thing what is gone inside the feet. Similarly, karmam we have created now. Only way to get out of karmam is by using karmam only technique, the technique of karmam. And that is where the importance of karma yogam comes. That's where the importance of karma yogam. People thinking, why I have to worry about karma yogam? I am a devotee. I don't have to worry about karma yogam, jnana yogam. I am such a pure devotee. Why do I have to bother about? No, it's not like that. Actually, strictly speaking, there is only one yogam directly linking with Krishna. Karmam, jnanam, bhakti are the processes. And they all go together very well. They cannot be separated easily. If you simply say, I am only a bhakta, I don't anything to do with jnanam, anything to do with karmam, that will be very difficult. Because in Bhagavad Gita, you see, if it was like that, only Krishna had to speak one word about bhakti. One or two verses, that was enough. But he didn't leave it at that. He did say about karmam, he did say about jnanam, he did say about bhakti. All three things were spoken, which shows that they all have to go together. One qualifies you for the other. It is like a pre-qualification for the bhakti process, karmam and jnanam. So, in this Bhagavatam also, that is why it is said, karma mokshaya karmani. How to get release from karmam by using karmam. That's the most important thing. Karma mokshaya karmani agateyam vidateyakadam yatam. That's what Krishna is saying. That karma mokshaya karmani, how to execute karmam by using karmam and free yourself from that, that is what Krishna has spoken here. Otherwise, these are the technology in the book, in the Bhagavatam, these are important things. Other things are not important. For example, sometimes people read things and then they start discussing absolutely unimportant topics. Unimportant in the sense, they itself is not the goal. For example, Ramachandra killed Bali, isn't it? Ramachandra killed Bali. People are still discussing what Ramachandra did was right or not. That discussion is still going on. How many years ago this happened? Ramachandra killed Bali probably millions of years ago. And today there are still people who read Ramayanam and they discuss, was it proper for Ramachandra to kill Bali or not? But Ramachandra killing Bali is not the message of Ramayanam. That we forget that. So like this we have so many, and people are still fighting each other on this issue. There are people who are fighting on this topic, whether Ramachandra killed Bali, was it proper or not? they still think, because when you present Ramachandra as a ideal king, ideal personality, supreme personality, people ask this question, how can he be like that? He killed Bali, he shouldn't have killed Bali. Because you take Ramayana and read it, that was not correct what he did. This way they start arguing about it. And their argument, and they finish there. Their spiritual life is over there. They won't take it any more further than that. Therefore, so many things, through all these stories and all these pastimes and all this creation process, devastation, everything, the sages wants to get some message to us. And that message is important. The mother, Shruti, has this goal behind it. That's why it is spoken like this, in this particular way. That's the important thing. So, it is the same way that karma also for us. We have all these restrictions on us, isn't it? Restrictions on us. What are the restrictions? Four regulative principles, for example. It's a restriction for only on our nature. Why is that restriction? To bring the same principle. Karmaya, karma mokshaya, karmani. Karma mokshaya, karmani. Unless you put restrictions, you will go and do all kinds of things in this world. All kinds of things in this world. And it will be mostly vikarma, what you will do. Otherwise, some of the sinful activities, why it is forbidden is because of this only, karma mokshaya, karmani. That we don't do things which are forbidden because of only one reason, that you will never be able to come out of karma. This bondage of karma. Karma is a topic which is discussed in everywhere. In the Bhagavadam, Ramayana, Mahabharatam, everywhere you will find this karma. Karma brings all our complicated situation what we are in today. So, Atyayasakarani, Karma Padalani, Karma Padalam they call it. Karma Padalam means something like a very tight network around us. We are tied with this network of karma. Atyayasakarani, Karma Padalani. And to free from this karma is the most difficult thing. Most difficult thing from this Karma Padalam, what we have created. Atyayasakarani, Karma Padalani. It is very extremely difficult to free oneself from that. Karma padalani, ajarya nirmalani. So, then after freeing oneself from karma, one should go to acharya, it says. Ajarya nirmalal bodhe bhakti pathe davaj ujidida mayandikim tavada. After you have freed yourself from karma, and then if you go to a spiritually advanced soul and hear from him, that knowledge will have an impact. The reason why all these things what we hear is not having any impact on us is because the karma is not pure. There is so much karma we have generated within us, and we are unable to free ourselves from that. Atyayasakarani, karma padalani, acharya niryanmalan, bodhe, bhaktipadhe davat, ujitada, mayandikim tavada, klishtva tarkapade param. So, after this has happened, one goes to an acharya, and from him, he hears the instruction, bodhe, bhaktipadhe davat, ujitada, mayandikim tavada. That in the bhakti process, he gets instructions how to execute bhakti. And simultaneously, the knowledge what is required is also provided. Klishtva tarkavade param. Tarkavade. Tarkavade means the process of the jnana process. Brahmakhyamanyebunaha. That klishtva tarkavade param. Brahmakhyamanyebunaha. That through tarkavadam or through the process of intelligence or the knowledge or arguments, in other words, through the logic and reasoning, you understand the truth. Brahma khyamanyebuna, and then chitta adratam dei vijindya bahubi siddhyandi janmandareihi. That this will happen when chitta adratam dei vijindya, when chittam inside consciousness gets so pure, vijindya bahubi. This will happen siddhyandi janmandareihi after several lifetimes only one can reach that status of purity. Only after several lifetimes one can reach that status of purity, where he is freed from the karmam and he has developed, executed bhakti process under the instructions of an acharya for sufficient period of time. And then he will know this, realize this truth. Otherwise it's not possible. So here, that is why karmam is mentioned here. Otherwise why in Ekadasha Skandam, at this very end of Srimad Bhagavatam, Avirhotra Maharshi has to talk about karmam so important. Karmaya karmamokshaya karmani. That he is now laying the foundation. Karmamokshaya karmani. He has to talk about that at this point in time. So, why I was saying all these things was, the purpose of saying this was that all these injunctions are there, that one should chant 16 rounds a day, the holy name. One should get up in the early morning. One should bathe. And one should not engage in sinful activities. One should avoid the association of non-devotees. One should not associate with materialists. These kind of things. Why is it spoken? It is for this reason, that there is some kind of discipline necessary in life. Because if there is no discipline, it will go. Our mind will not stay in one place. It will go all over. And it will engage in all kinds of vikarmam. It will start doing all kinds of vikarmam without any. So therefore, in order to put that control on the mind, all these restrictions are put in place. Otherwise, it will not happen. That is why so many requirements mentioned in the Bhagavatam. So, so if you do all these things, what will happen? At least you won't go and do something nonsense then, isn't it? So suppose you have to chant 16 rounds a day. I'm just giving an example. Even if the rounds are not good, at least in those 2 hours you won't go and do another vikarma. At least that's a profit, isn't it? Do you agree with that or not? That at least those 2 hours, even if the chanting is not perfect, or you're not able to get your mind under control, at least in those 2 hours you won't go and sit in front of the television. That itself is a great achievement for a person, because this karmam, so long as you haven't got any goal or knowledge of this karmam, the tendency is always to engage in karmam, either sleep or do karmam. That's all we will do, 2 things. Either we will sleep, and if we are tired of sleep, then we'll engage in some karmam. How does karmam? Karma means the senses will drag in different directions. Do this, do that. And obviously what the senses will choose, what gives pleasure to the senses, isn't it? To the mind. That's what the senses will choose. Senses will say, okay, let's go on holiday here. Or it will say, let's enjoy this, some new program on the television. Or something, it will always find something new. And the world is very good in creating new projects for the mind. So the mind will not be able to come to any control, under any control. And the mind which is not under control, what can that mind do? The mind has to come and stop the mind anymore. Where does the mind come from? This also you have to remember. Mind has come from false ego. If you remember, as soon as you wake up in the morning, first thing is, I am, I exist. And I am the monarch of all I serve. I am the controller. Ahangaram comes. From ahangaram comes the thoughts after that. That's the mind. So this mind and this false ego, where can it drive us into? What kind of situation it can go into? You can see from there. So therefore, it is said that karmam has created all this situation. So the only way you can control this karmam is disciplining ourselves in the proper way. And that is why in Shastram, all these injunctions are given. So that one does not go and do kind of karmam that will create more and more entanglement for him, and get absorbed in that and suffer more. So the first thing, in order to withdraw the senses, you have to forcibly implement or exercise certain discipline in the life. And therefore, all these injunctions are there. But what is happening now? Okay, there's so much excuse. Oh, I am a householder, so I have to go and earn money, and I have to pay my mortgage, I have to pay my bills, I have to do this thing, that thing. How long? How long this has to go on? And then after retirement, what do they say? Oh, I got a lot of time to watch all the programs on the television. and for gossiping. I have plenty of time now. So this is what our life is today, isn't it? Even after retirement, forget about household life. Household life, okay, we have to do certain things due to so-called duties, whatever we say it is, let it be. But due to attachment or whatever it is, we have to do. But even after retirement, this is what's happening. This is what is happening. Some of the things you observe them, that you don't know when the life is coming to an end, when this body is going to drop off, and they are busy sitting in the this horse racing goes on, and it comes on the television, and you have these betting offices. So sometimes when you go to these betting offices and look inside, just do a peep through the glasses, you will see there is a long table and lot of seats behind that. And there are people, old men, mostly men, who are probably 70 plus, sitting there, a row of them, 10, 12, 15, depending on the size of the room. And it's about 8 or 10 television screens showing the race going on at different places. And they've got this one notebook and a pen, they're looking at this race and writing it down. Either they're betting or whatever they are doing, I don't know, the whole details of it. And you are wondering, at this age in life, is this what they have found the best engagement? Can you imagine that? This is the engagement they have found to be doing at this time in life, at the age of 70 or 75. All their hair is gray, so it shows clearly that they are not anymore young men. They have finished work. They are not working anymore. So they have got all the time to do this. And somehow or other, material necessities, they are not struggling. You can see that. They're not struggling for material life, but there is no goal in life. The goal is how to win the horse race. That's the ultimate goal of life. How to locate the horse which is the winning horse. Can you imagine a life like that? That your life is centered around this one thing. How to find the winning horse in life. The goal. And for that, 10 o'clock in the morning you arrive, like in the office. And they are there for the whole day, sitting there doing this. So, it is not against those business I'm talking about. I'm talking about the people who have come down to this level. And this way, so many things we have created. And here we are talking about karmaya, karma mochaya, karma mochaya karmani, vidate hyagadam yatha. Then, karmam is such a thing. Sometimes you talk to somebody, you should go to temple. We tell them you should go to the temple. They will say, what do I get by going to the temple? What do I get, they say, by going to the temple? What? We are not coming to the temple to get something. We want to get rid of what we have got. That's why we are coming to the temple. Even that thing is not clicking in the head. You don't go to the temple to get anything from there. You go to the temple to get rid of what we have already accumulated enough in our subtle body, this so-called karma. And that is why it's necessary. These questions have no relevance. Why one should go to the temple? It's all coming from this misunderstanding. That mokshaya karma, mokshaya karmani. That even bathing in the time and sandhyavandanam, the different chanting the Gayatri three times a day. All these things, sandhyavandanam, namajapam, chanting the holy name, all these things is somehow or the other to bring the person under control. It's like a bull which has no control, running around in all directions, the so-called mind and the body. So in order to bring him under some discipline, these things are spoken so that karma will minimize, karma will come down, karma mochaya karmani. That as much as spiritual knowledge and spiritual realization comes, our karma will come down. Karma cannot increase. Increasing karma means increasing material life. Increasing material life means increasing material bodies from there. That's why it's spoken like that. That not only that, when you chant this holy name, automatically all our body gets purified. All our body gets purified. And not only that, with the result of that is swartha karma. That means selfish work will go away from us. The selfishness will go away from us. At the moment, everything has to be based on me. What benefit I get, isn't it? That is selfishness. And it is from the selfishness that binds us. That binds us to this world. So, as I was mentioning in the last class, that Brahmanas are that people who have come out of this selfishness. The world of selfishness. and they are able to give everything for the world and act in such a way that it does not bind them. And that is the technique of getting out of karma, by doing things in such a way that will release them from the karma. Karma mokshaya karmani adate vidate hagadam yada, it says. That otherwise it is not going to happen. So it's a very subtle science, this karmam, how to free oneself from karmam, and that is why Krishna has spoken about karma yogam in the Bhagavad Gita in the beginning itself, and the importance of karma yogam. Importance of karma yogam. Now, after that, we will go into what is known as the Rochanartha Bhagashuri. Karma mochaya karmani vidate hagadam yada. That this Vedam, which is Paroksham. Paroksham means Parokshavado Vedoyam, it says. Paroksham means everything is spoken indirectly. It is spoken. Everything is spoken indirectly. Balanam Anushasam, because we are children, otherwise we will not understand that. So, in order to get out of this karma, we mentioned there were two processes, isn't it? There were two processes. One was the Vedic process, which was sacrifices, karmakandam, the sacrifices or karmakandam, which is discussed in length in the Vedic literature. It's a major part of the Vedic literature is this karmakandam. So the purpose of the karmakandam is not to entangled in karma, but how to escape from karma. By executing karmakandam, that is what happens. But what Krishna has done is that while giving this knowledge of performing sacrifices, karmakandam, Krishna says there, by executing this karmakandam, you will get some benefit. What is the benefit? This tendency, propensity for executing karma will go away from you, if it is done with the proper understanding. And in order to give some encouragement to the kings or those great personalities those days, what they have done, what Krishna has done is, if you execute karmakandam nicely, you can go to the higher planets and enjoy. Just like when a child says, you know, in Ayurveda there are certain medicines which are very, very bitter, very difficult to take. And normally, therefore, most of the people prefer allopathy medicines, isn't it? Because allopathy medicines are very nice. They are all sweet tablets. By the time the sweetness goes, the medicine is gone already. So you don't feel the difficulty in taking allopathy medicines. Ayurvedic medicines are not like that. They are mostly extracted from the roots and the herbs, and some of their tastes are really, some of tastes so difficult to take it. So what the mothers do when the children get sick, if they want them to take any Ayurvedic medicines, first they will off-bribe them. They'll tell them, we'll give you a sweet or a laddu or something, some piece of sweet, if you take this, they'll say to them. So the child will take it. He will take it. He doesn't take it for curing his illness. He wants the sweet. That's what he wants. For the sake of the sweet, he is willing to make that sacrifice. He'll take it somehow or the other and then ask for the sweet straight away. He wants the sweet. So he told me, you'll give it to me. That's why I've taken it, he will say. As though he has done it for the mother's sake. Mother knows that if he doesn't take the medicine, he is going to get very ill. So she keeps pushing for the medicine to take. So the child takes it under this understanding that the medicine is he will get this sweet. So similarly, karmakandam is like that. Krishna says the sweet is heavenly planets. You can go and enjoy for some time. But if we execute karmakandam with this understanding that going to heavenly planets is the goal to enjoy, then Krishna says you have lost it. You didn't get the benefit from that. The goal is not going to heavenly planets. So that's why it says, Vedai sarvani karmani abhala bharadaya varnitani idi budhvatani tvai arpidani tavahi samanujaranyani naishkarmya mishem. While executing this karmakandam also, one has to be beware of this thing. That purpose is not to go to the heavenly planets and enjoy. On the other hand, the real goal of it is to get yourself purified and free from the bondage of karma. That is the purpose of karmakandam, to free oneself from karma. And on the other hand, if you get attracted by the words in the Vedas, which talks about what happens if you perform different sacrifices, you can go to the heavenly planets and you can enjoy there for so many hundreds and thousands of years, and you get attracted by that. Krishna says that's the greatest danger. You know where Krishna says about that? Krishna says in the second chapter of the same thing. When Arjuna mentioned about this, Krishna says, there is a verse there, Yamimam Pushpidam Loke. Yes. Krishna says, Yamimam Pushpidam Vajam Paravadandi Avibashchidam Vedavadarada Partha Nanyan Astidi Vadinam Kamad Mana Surgavaraha Janma Karma Phalapradan Kriya Vishesha Bahulam Bhoga Ishwarya Gadim Prati. In two verses, Krishna spoke about Karma Gandam and then told Arjuna, this should not happen. What was that translation? I'll read it. Men of small knowledge are very much attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruitive activities for elevation to heavenly planets, resultant good birth, power, and so forth. Being desirous of sense gratification and opulent life, they say that there is nothing more than this. Big important lesson, because when we execute karmakandam, rituals and karmakandam, the goal will change. Krishna doesn't like us changing the goal. The goal is self-realization. Instead, if we take to karmakandam and thinking that I am following the Vedas, I am executing the karmakandam, and the results are wonderful, you can go to the heavenly planets and enjoy there. And when we finish the benefit of executing karmakandam in the heavenly planets, we can come back here, again perform karmakandam, and again go to the heavenly planets, again come back. This way you will get back and forth going. Krishna says that you have to be careful about. Should not get trapped in that either. So you can see, when Krishna is talking about spiritual life, it's a very serious business. Very, very serious business. And there the main problem is coming from karmam. So that karmam, how to purify, that's why Krishna has spoken from then on in the third chapter and at the end of the second chapter about karmam. So, Yamimam Pushpinam Loge, that is a beautiful flowery language of the Vedas. People get even attracted by that. So having said all these things, karma moshaya karmani, the importance of freeing oneself from karmam comes. Importance of freeing oneself from karmam comes. Vidhate hagadam yadha. Balana manushasanam karma moshaya karmani vidhate hagadam tada. So, after that, you will see there, in the next verse, Krishna talks about something more important. Na acharet vastu vedo oktam swayam ajyo ajitendriyaha vigarmana adharmena mrityo mrtyumupaitisaha. Very important words. Na acharet vastu vedo oktam. Suppose this understanding of Vedas, Vedic knowledge, is not there in a person, and he does not follow these instructions seriously. Swayam ajyo ajitendriyaham is ignorant, ajnyan, ajitendriya. Naturally, he has no control on his senses either by not executing these things properly. And with swayam ajnya, ajnya means, basically, this is an important word, ajnyan. Ajnya means he does not know. We in English we say ignorant, isn't it? A person is ignorant. Ajnan means ignorance. That's the closest word in English we can say. But it is more than that. Why? Ignorance about something, you can understand. Say for example, an example that's normally given is this. That in the darkness, you saw a rope and you mistook it as a snake. Isn't it? Mistakenly you have thought that as a snake. Right. It is exactly the problem with us also. That the mistake is not that you didn't know that it is not a rope. The mistake is not only that you didn't know it is not a rope, but you also took it that it is a snake. You see? You took it that it is a snake. Similarly, we at the current situation, we don't know that we are the soul. We don't know that. But on the other hand, we have thought that we are the body. We think we are the body. So that's why that example matches. In the darkness, when you see the rope, first thing you got into your mind was, it's a snake, isn't it? As soon as you thought it's a snake, what happened? Immediately you have built up a lot of thoughts in your head. What kind of thoughts? A fear for the snake. And then the mind is saying, is a snake? What kind of snake it is? You want to analyze whether it's a highly poisonous snake or it's an ordinary snake. And then, have I touched the snake? Did the snake touch me or did it bite me? Thoughts like this. And fear builds up inside straight away, isn't it? And when somebody brought the light and showed it to you, and you looked at the rope and you realized it was not a snake, you start thinking about yourself, what all fear I have built up inside, isn't it? That thought will come to you. So it is similar to that. The soul we are, actually the spirit soul, by spiritual by nature, I have no idea what it is. But I have totally absorbed in this body, which I think I am. And all these impressions on the body, like the mind, intelligence, false ego, senses, all these things I am considering myself as that. Is it not? So, not only that I don't know I am not the soul, I also know that I am this body. I also know I am this body. It is all very easy to explain theoretically, it's not difficult. Only problem comes is to realize these things. To realize these things. That's where the problem is. But first you have to understand the theory anyway. Then only you can start the practice, isn't it? So, the important thing to remember here is that Krishna is saying here, Na acharet yastu vedoktam. What has been spoken by the Vedic literature as the thing to follow. If you does not follow that, what will happen is, Swayam ajnyo ajidendriyaha. He is an ajnan. He is like this person who have mistakenly taken the rope as the snake. And it is similar to his situation. What else? He is ajnan. He is in ignorance like this. And ajidendriya. He has no control on his senses either. He has no control on his senses. What will happen to him? He will perform vigarmam. That's why in the next word he says, vigarmana hiya adharmena. Because of his vigarmam, what he will perform, what will happen in Mrityor Mrityam Upaitisaha. Death after death. That means continuously changing the body. That is what will happen to that person. If one does not accept this these instructions. Najarelyastu Vedo Uktam Swayam Ajnyo Ajendriyaha Vikarmana Adharmena Mrityor Mrityam Upaitisaha. That because of Vikarmam Adharmam will come. And because of adharmam, mrityor mrityum upaitisa, from death after death, from mrityu and mrityu, again between that janam maranam, birth, death, that cycle has to continue for that person. This is why Krishna is saying like this. But there is one problem here. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says this, nobody can stay without doing karma. Now, if it is all like this, if karma is so much a problematic thing, why don't we stay away from karma? Isn't it? That question will come. Okay, I read Bhagavadam, and Bhagavadam is saying like this, this karma can bind you like this, and I'll engage in all kinds of karma. So what shall I do? That is what Krishna talks about in the third chapter. If you look into the third chapter in the Bhagavad Gita, there is a verse there, I think the verse number is... fifth verse, I think. In the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, you will see Krishna very clearly telling Arjuna, because Arjuna, when Krishna told him all these things in the beginning, Arjuna says, I'm not fighting then. If fighting is going to cause the whole problem. So, answer to that. Krishna says to him, Na kaschali kshanam avi jadu dushtatya karma kral karyade avashak karma sarva pragati jair gunaihi. Krishna didn't want to mess around at that time. Krishna says to him, Nahigaschil kshanam avi jadu dushtatya karma kral. No one can sit idle even for a second, Krishna says. All men are forced to act helplessly according to the impulses born of the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment, Krishna says. Not even for a moment. We cannot stay even for a moment free from karma. This is the very nature of the body. So you can see the trap. On the one hand, we understand karma binds us. How does it bind? buying through vikarmam we will perform. When we discuss here, last Sunday we also mentioned this, that out of artham, dharmam, artham, kamam and moksham, our, without anybody telling us, two things we will do without any instructions. We don't need Vedas for that. What is it? Artham and kamam, isn't it? Arthagamam, economic development and sense gratification, you don't need anybody to instruct you, do they? We don't need any instructions from anybody for making money and for enjoying senses. That, we are very experts at that. Our human society has developed such plans and programs that the whole lifetime you can get occupied with that. Arthakarma, arthagamam. So, arthagamam is not the goal of life, and Vedas will never ever talk about arthagamam. That's not the purpose. But because this arthagamam is strongly in us, it has to be controlled. There is no other way. You cannot outrightly stop it. If you tell somebody, give up all earning money business or all this sense gratification overnight, what will happen? That man will get into lunatic asylum. That's what will happen to him. You won't be able to manage that. You see, suppose in life, all happiness comes in one stroke to you. What will happen? You won't be able to handle it. Say you won a lottery worth about, say, jackpot, 200 million pounds or 50 million pounds or something. You won't be able to sleep that night. Definitely not. Definitely you won't be able to sleep, because it's certain. Because every day for a few hundred pounds we are working whole week. It's all going to come to an end straight away, isn't it? So that means at least that first, not one night, even many nights you won't get sleep. Because of how to manage this whole huge amount that has come to you now. So, exactly like that, if a heavy load of distress comes in life also, you won't be able to handle that. Suppose heavy distress comes, all your relatives, friends, everyone has left you, and you got so sick with the body and the mind, and altogether in a depressed state of situation, what will happen at that time? That's also very difficult to handle, because to some point your mind will manage it. After that it cannot cope with this. It gets very, very difficult. And that's when you end up in very difficult. Then you won't even trust one word what Krishna is saying. Won't even trust one word what Krishna is saying. That's why it's so difficult. In spiritual life, to give up all karmam in one stroke is difficult. But this tendency is very strong in us to execute karmam. It will continue. That's why Krishna says, Krishna says here, nahi kaschil kshanam abhi jadu tishta tyakarma kral. You cannot stay out of karmam, but you have to get out of karmam. Complicated. So therefore, this process has been developed, what is known as karma yoga. What is known as karma yoga. Now you can appreciate why karmam is important in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So many years we were talking about it, and people are saying, oh, karmam, what has got to do with me? I am a devotee, bhakti. I'm following the process of bhakti. That's fine. But all of vikarma, whatever you are doing, what about that? That is no answer to that. So, unless karma is purified, all bhakti cannot be only built up above that. Because our bhakti otherwise will all be very much mixed up with all these kind of things that won't make any progress. We will be always one step further, 10 steps backwards. That will be the life then, spiritual life. So, having said that, Krishna is talking about here in the Bhagavatam also, it is mentioned about this, that this karmagandam is only with this goal, and na charet yastu vedoktam soyam ajnyo ajriendriyaha vigarmana hya dharmena mrityor mrityum upaidisam. And in the next verse he says, Avirhotra Maharshi says there, that those who have brought these things under control, how vedoktameva karkurvano nisango arpidam ishvare naishkarmyam labhade siddhim rajanartha bhalashruti. That is the thing. Vedoktameva kurvano nisango arpidam ishvare. That if one executes the karmam without expecting any results from that, all for Krishna's pleasure, everything for Krishna's pleasure, nisangam arpidam ishvare, for Krishna's pleasure, if we execute, what will happen?
Naishkarmyam labhade siddhim. Because he has executed the karmam without attachment or aversion, or without the concept of I am the doer or I am the enjoyer, because of that he becomes perfect in his karmam. He becomes perfect in his karmam. Once he has reached that stage, then he can continue to do karmam as long as he wants without getting affected by that. This is the beauty of karma yoga. Krishna is teaching us that how to deal in this world. Sukha dukkha samehrutva labha labha jaya jayo. When you talk about karma yoga, Krishna will say this, that this is the way to execute karmam in this world, how to liberate oneself from that. And if one executes karmam in that way for any amount of time, it will not bind him. He is free from that. There is no bondage for him. That is why Krishna was able to do all that what he did in this world. All what he did in this world. Even while leaving this world, while saying, after the Mahabharata war, when he, after killing the uncle, he comes out smiling from the arena. From the arena, when Kamsa was killed, he jumped onto Kamsa's chest. After all, who is Kamsa? Devaki's brother, isn't it? Mother's brother, uncle. Uncle, it is direct uncle. The nephew is jumping onto the uncle's chest and finished him up. By then he was dead. The uncle was gone. And he comes out smiling from there, as though one business I've just finished. I've finished one business. In that mood he comes out. And then after that, every time when you look into Krishna's pastimes or activities in this world, while dancing with the gopis, in the middle of the rasa dance, he goes away from there, from the middle of all the gopis. Radharani and so many other gopis were completely lost. And they realized at that time, Krishna is above all these things. And that is why when the gopis started glorifying Krishna later on, by now Krishna's position as, he is not, they were thinking before that Krishna is just like a cowherd boy, so many other cowherd boys, but a lot more beautiful. Lot more beautiful. But at that point, Gopi says to Krishna like this, Nakhalu Gobiga Nandano Bhavan. You are not just a child, ordinary child of Gobiya. Gobiya, they are referring to Yashoda Devi. You are not just a son of Mother Yashoda. Then what else? Akhila Dehinam Andar Almadrak. You are the super soul, the soul of all the living entities. Imagine gopis were saying this. Gopis had no spiritual education. They were ordinary people who sold butter, milk and milk products and made a living. And they were ordinary people according to the standards of this world. They never went to Gurukulam, studied any shastram. They didn't perform any sacrifices, nothing. They had nothing on spiritual level to their credit. And this gopi's mouth, these words are coming out. How is that possible? Nakhale gobiganandano bhavan. You are not just the son of Mother Yashoda, gobiganandanam. You are not that. Then, akhila dehinam andaral madrak. You are actually the andaral madrak, the soul inside who is a drik, who is witnessing everything from inside. Who is the Drik and Drishyam, two things. See, Drishyam is the one what seen, Drik is the seer from inside. How come, you can remember this, how come gopis who had no spiritual education or any kind of upbringing in this world, at least in this lifetime, they were able to say this to Krishna? This is a question, isn't it? You have to ask this question. So here and there you will see through the lips of these great devotees, Vedavyas will bring out this point all the time of Krishna's position, who Krishna is. That is the point what we have to take note of. Gopis are telling us why? Because Krishna has made them to realize who he is. Gopis realized who Krishna is. So their relationship with Krishna was different. Akhila dekhinam andar al madrak vikhana sartido vishwaguptaye sakhamudeivan satvadam kule. You have come and taken birth in this world and making us all believe that you are an ordinary child like anybody else, but you are not. But you are not. Gopis were convinced on that and they spoke like this to Krishna, which is the indication to us that when Krishna shows that grace and mercy to somebody, automatically you will know what Krishna is. what Krishna is, you will realize at that point. Otherwise, it's not possible. By our effort, it's not going to happen. So here, in the Bhagavatam also, it is said like this, Vedoktameva kurvano nisangorpidami ishvare naishkarmyam labhade siddhim rojanartha bhalashudim. So this process, what we have talked about, is this process of Vedic sacrifices, is one process by which you can get out of this entanglement of karma. The second process is the deity worship. These are the two processes we saw to get out of this karma. But that is how in the next verse it talks about it. Ye aashukhadaya grandhim nirjaheshu paralmana vinobachare devam tandroptena jakeshavam. That first karma yogam they spoke about, mentioned in the Vedas. The second karma yogam is what is discussed in the next verses, which is based on the tantram. It says like this, ye aashukhadaya grandhim nirjaheshu paralmanaha. That one who wants to kill this effect of karma, vidhinobajare devam, he should follow according to the injunctions, tandroptena cha keshavam, he should worship Krishna based on the tantram, based on the tantric vidhi. It says like that. So from now on, the remaining verses, what he has spoken, who our Avirhotra Maharshi has spoken, this is verse 47. That means, 9 verses from here is the process of deity worship, what he is discussing here. So these 9 verses is a very limited version of the description of deity worship. Description of deity worship will come later on in the Ekadasha Skandam. I think it is chapter 29 or so, where Krishna will talk to Uddhava about deity worship. So at that time, we will discuss about deity worship in depth. But temporarily to say, we will mention this much, that the process of deity worship is another karma yoga. We may always mistake that it is it is a process of, we say, oh no, it's not karma yoga, it's bhakti yoga. No, it is karma yoga. But karma yoga that will lead into karma yoga that will develop, purify us from our karma. Yes, tanya karma yoga tava bhajana samaye yatra jamishta mutim khadyam satvai garubam drishadi khadimrdi kvapiva bhavayitvaham. That when this executing this karma yoga, there are so many rules and regulations. Even if one follows all the rules and regulations of karma yoga, which is very much defined in the Vedic literature, tandroktena cha keshavam, it said that Vedic tantrams, all the panchratriya vidhi, vaihasanam, and then there are other various literature written by great, great sages about the process of deity worship. So that has to be followed. Hridyam satvaigarubam drishadi hridimadi kvabhiva bhavayitvam. That, and then Krishna has to be worshipped in that particular form of the deity. And that can be in various forms. It can be done through the clay, through the wood, through the stone, and like that, and in the mind, and various ways it's discussed. I'll come to that later. Pushpai gandhair nivedyer kubija virajito shaktido bhakti bhude. Now, the 5 major ingredients in this is jalam, gandham, pushpam, dupam, deepam. The 5 things. These are 5 major ingredients in the worship. Pushpai gandhair nivedyehi. All these 5 are representing the 5 material elements. Pushpair gandhair nivedyer kubija virajito. We should execute shaktido bhakti bhudehi. But is the worship complete if you have all these things? No. The worship is not at all complete. When is the worship complete? Shaktido bhakti bhudehi. That if he has devotion. Otherwise, you may have all the best of the ingredients. You may do everything promptly on time and everything done to the perfection, but there is no bhakti inside. There is no bhavam. That bhavam or the mood of the person who is doing that, that is the most important thing in that. Shakti do bhakti bhudehi nityam varyam sabaryam vidhada daivibho tvalprasadam bhajeyam. So, in order to worship Krishna, this process of deity worship executed with devotion can release one from the bondage of karma. That is the beauty. Can release the one from the bondage of karma. So, karma yogam mentioned in the Vedic literature, that is one process, karma kandam, and the process of deity worship, which is called here, estvanya karma yoga tau bhajana samaye, yatraja bhishta murtim, khadyam satvaigarubam drashadi khadimadi, kvabhiva bhavayitvam, pushpai gandhair nivedir, kubija virajido, shaktido, bhakti bodher nityam varyam sabanyam, vidhada daivibho, tulprasadam bhajayam. If it is executed properly with devotion to Krishna, as we talked many times before, the whole principle behind this deity worship is devotion, bhakti. And when bhakti is there, you execute in one way. When there is no bhakti, it's a job, you execute in another way. The two different ways. So, shakti do bhakti bhudehi. Bhakti is the thing that purifies the person from karma. Nothing else. Otherwise, you can mechanically do it for years and years. It will have no impact. What purifies a person is, when he executes with bhakti, this karma yogam, automatically that will purify him. With bhakti, if you execute karma yogam, it will purify him. Otherwise, not. Shakti do bhakti bodehi nityam varyam sabaryam vidhada daivibo tulprasadam bhajayam. And that will please Krishna. And surrender him to Krishna in that way through the process of deity worship. So these are two processes which Avirhotra has mentioned here to King Nimi, and King Nimi understood, and therefore Karmakandam there was no need to explain very much, because Karmakandam was known to the kings very well. Nimi has himself executed Karmakandam many times before, so there was no explanation needed for that. But on the karma, on the deity worship process, our Avirhotra Maharshi went a little bit detailed in 5 or 8, 9 verses. He covered that topic separately. And with that, Avirhotra Maharshi finishes his discussion with King Nimi. And it was at that time that King Nimi asked this question. What are the different incarnations? In which form should I worship Krishna? Earlier he asked, who is Narayana, isn't it? So the answer was given by Pipalayana, who is Narayana? Now the question comes, this Narayana has appeared several times in different forms. So, which are those forms? This question came up from King Nimi. So, in order to answer that, the next stage took over that responsibility. So, Drumila answers in the Srimad Bhagavatam this question from, King Nimi. That's why the whole of next chapter, you will find it is Drumila's answer. Drumila's explanations on the incarnations of Krishna, which is a very long chapter. We will discuss it next Sunday. And after that, we have got two more yogis, which is Chamasa and Karabhajana. So, Drumila, Chamasa, Karabhajana, and three more yogishuras have answered three different questions. Chamasa was asked a question, what will happen to those who do not follow the process of Krishna consciousness? That question was answered by Chamasa. And eventually, finally, the last question was, is there any specific way of worshipping Krishna in the age of Kali? Which was answered by Karabhajana. That is how these 9 sages finishes the discussions with King Nimi. So today, till now, we have more or less completed Avirhotra's discussions. We'll continue with the deity worship next Sunday and we'll take it from there. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.